Universität Hamburg.
I'll just start my talk. Strange worlds, secondary worlds, fantastic worlds. Worlds familiar to us and yet defamiliarized through the element of magic. Fantastic literature often invites us to think outside the box of normality and explore several what-if scenarios. What if people could actually use magic? What if our world was not how we think it was? What if there existed a multitude of worlds out there? Archaic worlds, worlds with dragons, worlds of magic. All too often, these worlds transform into the arena in which deadly battles between good and evil take place. Fantastic literature for children and young adults tends to reduce these central dichotomies to their basic levels. For example, evil antagonists are regularly symbolizing evil in its purest form. Magic and magical elements help the child and teenage protagonists to defeat their opponents and make the world a better place. Being touched by a supernatural element often culminates in the chosenness of the hero or heroine. Harry Potter is destined to save the world from Lord Voldemort's clutches. Will and Lyra in Philip Pullman's His Dark Materials are designated to keep dust and hence a fundamental part of human nature from being destroyed. There is an unbelievably huge number of supernatural elements in fantasy literature. If we only scratch the surface, we will discover word magic, magical creatures, and magical objects. Magic also symbolizes power, and power repeatedly seduces characters to turn their backs on rules and socially accepted behavior. It enables the antagonists to create their own world order with them on top of the social hierarchy. I aim to provide you with a rough profile of supernatural elements in literature for children and young adults, how they are manifested, what they signify for the characters, and ultimately what they mean or might mean for the reader. The Harry Potter series is only one example among many how supernatural elements change the protagonist's world. When Harry's magical abilities manifest themselves, it becomes obvious that he is no longer part of the normal world, but that he now belongs to another world, an elitist world. His new sphere is filled with unfamiliar abilities and wonder. Not only is Hogwarts an exclusive school, but the Wizarding Society exists completely separate and hidden from the normal world. It has its own newspapers, for example, Daily Prophet, its own mailing system, you all know Old Post, don't you? Its own national sports, which is Quidditch. Its own currency, so gallons, sickles, nuts. Its own system of social strata, basically its own social microcosm. J.K. Rowling creates a very complex world. Most of all, the little things are intriguing and catch readers' attention, like tents, which are far bigger from the inside than from the outside, or purses in which you can store an unlimited amount of items. I mean, wouldn't that be fabulous in our world? A special emphasis lies on word magic. To successfully accomplish a magical spell, the witch or wizard needs to speak the magic Latin-sounding words like Wingardium Leviosa or Expecto Patronum. Rowling does not, however, create a new language like Tolkien did or Christopher Paolini tries to do. The word magic, as well as the existence of magic and its consequences, are never explained or challenged. To quote Suman Gupta, in the magic world, things and qualities are simply manifest. They just are so. There is no need, no ability, no desire, no will to explain why they are so. End of quote. There seems to be an inner magical power which is channeled through the wand. Before Harry starts his life at Hogwarts, the reader witnesses how magic kind of leaks out of Harry. For example, when his hair grows, quote, all over the place. Or when he makes a glass disappear in the zoo without wanting to. So at Hogwarts, witches and wizards undergo magical training to control and strengthen their abilities. Boarding schools are a very popular motif in fantasy literature for children and young adults. In Trudy Canavan's The Black Magician trilogy, for example, magical training is vital for the survival of the young magicians. Otherwise, they may destroy themselves war and unleash their magical force on the population. This also holds for PC Cast and Christine Cast's House of Night novels. Without being surrounded by adult vampires at the school, a young vampire fledgling would reject the change into a full vampire and die. For Harry, magic enables him to break the shackles of slavery in his old home, experience social acknowledgement, rise to his full potential, and even gain heroic status. As soon as he enters the wizarding world, he has to learn that all that glitters is not gold. The specialness of magic has its own often fatal seductive appeal. At Hogwarts, he meets Professor Quirrell, who turns out to be one of Voldemort's minions. Like every other member of the dark side, Quirrell regards himself as uber-human, as homo superior, and in his opinion, rules like not killing a unicorn and not killing Harry Potter do not longer apply to him. Further, he feels the compelling draw of power and justifies his deeds with the following sentence, quote, "There is no good and evil, there is only power and those too weak to seek it," end of quote. So the end justifies the means, no matter what. The notion of might makes right culminates in the seventh book in Magic is Might. The might to enslave and kill the less powerful race of Muggles. Voldemort aims to purify the magical society and its long-term goal, the whole world, in order to establish the magical race at the further development of the human race and hence the crowning of creation in general. Some might know that from the X-Men series. Suman Gupta correctly states that this, quote, "fascist ideology primarily characterizes the evil of the dark side," unquote. Rowling regularly emphasized that Voldemort's magical abilities exceed those of normal wizards by far. Therefore, he's strong enough to pose a real threat to the whole world. With the expression that Voldemort has moved, quote, "beyond usual evil," unquote, Rowling acknowledges on the one hand that Voldemort is incredibly powerful and hard to stop, and on the other hand, she challenges the reader with the notion that there is a usual evil in the world, which needs to be confronted and overcome by each individual. The supernatural element of magic in fantasy fiction for children and adults repeatedly shows how the threshold of using violence is lowered. As I've just pointed out, evil wizards in the Harry Potter books use the fact that they possess magical abilities to justify racial segregation and to actually kill Muggles. Possessing magical strength often tempts the bearer to test one's power on weaker individuals, as seen in Voldemort's regular torture of his minions and also seen in Trudy Canavan's The Black Magician trilogy, when a gang of students abuses the protagonist Zendaya due to her lower social status. Often these torture methods do not leave any outward scars. Some just intrude the mind, and as shown in Canavan's trilogy or in Christopher Paolini's The Inherent Cycle, create an extremely effective illusion of pain. As a result of the combination of the use of mental and not physical power and the lack of our sense of abuse, many predators feel encouraged to use this abstract method of violence without dirtying their hands. In the wrong hands, magic is revealed as a very powerful and dangerous weapon. While Voldemort and his regime glorify magic, characters like Petunia Dursley demonize it. From the beginning, the Dursleys abuse Harry, and they permanently remind him that he's not a real part of their family. As Elaine Ostrey states, quote, "Harry is a classical outcast child, a fairy tale, a myth in the ranks of Cinderella," unquote. Well, at least in the beginning. Being a person who is touched by a supernatural element, Harry becomes the other to his family. Most of all, Petunia and Vernon perceive him as a threat to their concept of normality. Petunia even labels him as being abnormal and a freak. The identification of otherness often functions as an indicator for fear and envy. Fear for the unknown and envy for the powerful abilities. In Petunia's case, the reader knows it's both. Well, at least if he or she had read the last book. Harry's otherness, however, is not only manifested in the distinction between Muggle and Wizard, it further plays an important role in the Wizarding Society as such. Harry differs from all other wizards because he's been marked by Voldemort and was thereby chosen to defeat his arch enemy. Like many other fantasy heroes, Harry has to learn that being the chosen one is as much a privilege as a burden. He repeatedly saved the world from Voldemort's evil plans. This, however, is not achieved without blood and sweat and tears. In the final book, the weight of his task is almost too much for him to bear. Unlike Frodo in The Lord of the Rings, however, Harry decides to fulfill his destiny and willingly frees the world from evil. In his Dark Materials, Philip Pullman creates a multitude of worlds. Some include supernatural elements, some don't. Within Lyra's world, the reader discovers a matriarchal society which uses magic as their main tool, which are the witches. Another supernatural element for us as readers and for others from other worlds is the manifestation of a person's soul, which is the demon in Pullman's books. My focus, however, lies on the instruments of power which Pullman introduces to us, the alethiometer, which is the truth reader, and the subtle knife. These two instruments follow a rich tradition of magical tools which help the bearer to achieve his task. We can even find them within traditional fairy tales. For example, the Brothers Grimm's The Magic Table, The Gold Donkey, and The Cudgel in the Sack, in which the cudgel in the sack helps the third brother to regain the other brother's treasures. An example from fantasy literature for children and young adults are the tools which Peter, Susan, and Lucy get from Father Christmas in C.S. Lewis's The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Father Christmas puts special emphasis on the fact that, quote, they are tools, not toys, unquote. The same accounts for Lyra's truth reader. This instrument is not especially designed for her. It can be read by anyone. Lyra is the only one, however, who can read it, quote, by grace, unquote. Which means that the meaning of the symbols just reveal themselves to her. It helps Lyra to accomplish her task, and this is the only period of time in which Lyra can use the alethiometer without the assistance of books which explain the multi-layered symbols to her. After she has prevented dust from leaking out of the world, she loses the intuitive ability to read the instrument and has to regain it by work. Her possession of this instrument is not linked to a sacrifice and is thus in contrast to Will and his subtle knife. Like the one that chooses Harry, the subtle knife chooses Will as its new bearer. His instruments of power cripples its bearer with a special mark. Will loses two of his fingers in the process of acquiring it. As Karen Patricia Smith stresses, quote, its power is tremendous and horrific. Such an instrument is not owned without sacrifice, unquote. The nature of this sacrifice is not only physical but also emotional. The sadness and weight of the burden figuratively crush Will. Quote, and he put the knife down on the table and crouched low, hugging his wounded hand and cried. It was all too much to bear. The sobs wrecked his throat and his chest and the tears dazzled him. He was desolate. Unquote. In the beginning, he even refuses his new role, but soon realizes that he has obviously no choice in that matter. And I now quote a dialogue between him and his father, and he doesn't know yet that he is his father. His father starts, you haven't got a choice. You're the bearer. It's picked you out. And what's more, they know you've got it, and if you use it against them, they will tear it from your hands and use it against the rest of us forever and ever. But why should I fight them? I've been fighting too much. I can't go on fighting. I want to... Have you won your fights? Will was silent. Then he said, yes, I suppose. You fought for the knife. Yes, but then you are a warrior. That's what you are. Argue with anything else, but don't argue with your own nature. Will knew that the man was speaking the truth, but it wasn't a welcome truth. It was heavy and painful. And end of quote. So the knife chose Will due to his nature. At this point, Philip Pullman introduces the conflict between being chosen to do something, or in this case, one's nature, and one's free will. In the third book, Will realizes that his destiny is not set in stone. Quote, Will said to his father's ghost, you said I was a warrior. You told me that was my nature, and I shouldn't argue with it. Father, you were wrong. I fought because I had to. I can't choose my nature, but I can choose what I do. And I will choose, because now I'm free. End of quote. All in all, through his role as the knife bearer and through the battles he had to face, Will discovers the strength of his free will, which outweighs his nature and thus underlines Pullman's agenda that every individual is free to choose his or her own path in life, without, for example, giving in to an organization such as the Church in his books, which wants to destroy free will and keep people ignorant and obedient. The knife enables Will to open entries to numerous worlds. At the same time, dust leaks out of these windows and threatens to disappear from the worlds. The consequence of this loss would be that, quote, everything good will fade away and die, unquote. This reveals the double-edged power of the knife. By serving Will in his good cause, it also follows its own intentions and contributes to the destruction of dust. By stressing the unlimited power of the knife, Philip Pullman points out its ambiguity and finally the fact that, quote, it would have been infinitely better if it had never been made, unquote. In the end, Will destroys the knife and with it the underlying temptation to abuse its power for self-serving purposes. Another contrast to Frodo, by the way. Most of the time, magic is neither depicted as being good or evil. It always depends on what it is used for. The Southern knife can be used to support or to destroy God. Magic in Harry Potter can save or harm humankind. We can also perceive this in, for example, Trudy Canavan's The Black Magician's Trilogy or Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings. Being in touch with the supernatural element is always connected to great responsibility, no matter if it's a magical instrument or the ability to directly use magic. Harry chooses to give his life for the greater good, and Will and Lyra agree to give up their love and connection in order to save the ghost from the land of the dead and prevent dust from leaking out of the worlds. As Millicent Lenz stresses, quote, the good of countless others takes precedence over personal desires, unquote. One of these substantial focal points of this genre aims at the ability and willingness to choose freely between good and evil. Or, as Dumbledore puts it, quote, it is our choices, Harry, that show what we truly are, far more than our abilities, unquote. Through the element of defamiliarization, the authors try to convey essential messages. Like many writers of fantasy fiction for children and young adults, these two authors endeavor to enlighten their readership and sensitize their outlook on the world. Rowling, for example, creates awareness for racism, and Pullman reminds us of the negative effect when a huge organization like the Church tries to indoctrinate people with their ideological convictions. Additionally, the heroes teach readership moral values, and as Roni Native puts it, quote, the Harry Potter stories, and numerous others too, center on what children need to find internally, the strength to do the right thing, to establish a moral code, unquote. Supernatural elements like magic do not only demonstrate the creativity of an author, but, quote, magic can be regarded as a metaphor for maturation. The protagonist's magical development offering a model of growth for readers, unquote. Inner maturation is often made visible for the reader and the characters in the character's increase of magical ability. Most of the time, this growth is not gained without a price, often manifested in personal sacrifices. The protagonists suffer, and like a phoenix which emerges from the ashes, they emerge from the hardship of the journeys as mentally and magically, sometimes even physically, stronger characters. Their growth also leads to self-discovery and hence enforces their self-value and power. Only an increase in power enables them to defeat their enemies, and thus satisfies and reinforces our longing for justice. Fantastic literature for children and young adults not only quenches the reader's obvious thirst for supernatural elements, but is also employed to subtly guide and enlighten the reader. Although some critics stress the point that this story is used to escape reality, it also has everything it takes to develop into the Bildungsroman of the 21st century. Thank you.